afternoon, and welcome listeners to this Saturday afternoon broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, just across the street from DP&L in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at the store at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to discuss with you any of your firearms-related needs or interests. Today is the long-awaited show dealing with insurance and insurance-related issues, and I've got three special guests in studio. We have Tony Calley from Allstate, and on the air we have Marty Hayes, who's the president of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, and David Fedders, who's an attorney with the Columbus-based Barney DeBras Law Firm. And I want to welcome all of them to the show today. And I want to start it today. I wanted to start today's show off by talking in a very general sense about the concept of insurance. And I guess the best way, and what most people think about insurance, at least on the very basic level, is if they're involved in a situation where a firearm is either damaged or destroyed in a catastrophe like a fire or a flood or something like that, or a firearm is stolen from their house in conjunction with a burglary or some other theft-related incident. And, Tony, I'm going to start off with you. Am I correct in assuming that that's kind of the very basic level of insurance that people get into relative to firearms?
Yep, absolutely, Jeff. Those cases, as you lined out, are the easy ones. Damaged in a flood, stolen from a theft.
Okay, I'll start off by saying, you know, I'm a hunter. Let's say I'm a hunter, and I have a shotgun and a rifle that I use for hunting in the fall. And, you know, I do like a lot of people, even though it's ill-advised, they leave them stored in a gun case, secured, reasonably secured, underneath their bed. Is that something that if somebody broke in the house and stole it, is the homeowner going to be, I'm going to use the term, held accountable for at least a portion of that because they failed to put it in a safe or otherwise secure it? Or is the fact that it was stolen in a legitimate burglary going to be enough as far once they get a police report to satisfy the claim?
Okay, held accountable, I think you're talking about coverage for the gun.
Yes, coverage for the gun.
Property, okay.
Yeah.
And in that theft, I'm going to assume there's other items stolen, deductibles apply, but talking straight about the firearm, policies in general are going to have a very basic limited coverage for firearms. Many times I see they're capped at $500, and if there's more equipment than that, I would certainly advise that it be reviewed with an agent, and it's very simple to increase the coverage and inexpensive for beyond the $500.
That's very useful to know because $500 is barely the cost of a shotgun these days.
Exactly.
So the listeners out there, just something I want you to stay tuned. And you know, obviously there may be differences between insurance companies, but it's something that just making an assumption that you have three guns valued at $1,500 is going to be covered, that's probably not an assumption we should make. And it's probably best to at least give a phone call mm-hmm. to your local agent and discuss specifically what your needs are.
Absolutely. And I should clarify, that's not $500 per firearm. That's $500 for the law.
Yes.
I brought some pricing with me for some examples. To double that, to go to $1,000 is $2 a year, which is a joke. It just is a matter of knowing what the limit is
right.
and making sure that it's matched. Other examples, if there was a $5,000 limit per item with a $25,000 max, is a $59 per year change.
Well, so that's
very,
a
very
wonderful. That'd be a very good investment considering the potential loss. You're saying basically up to $25,000 in firearms loss for an additional $59 above and beyond their normal premium. Is that correct?
That is correct for the basic named peril losses are what they're going to be referred to, and it is theft is the primary great example of that.
Okay, well, how about if it would be a fire? Would that be very similar if there was a fire in the home and the guns were not in a safe that was fire resistant and the guns were destroyed or seriously damaged to the where they couldn't be used again?
Yeah.
Would that also be
fire is going to be in the same category? What's not going to be covered in those categories is mysterious disappearance. A hunter may lose a gun while hunting and other types of losses. I think we're going to start talking more about some of the collectors or high value items in a bit.
How about if a hunter was out, say, in West Virginia hunting and he stayed at a local hotel and somebody broke into his car while he was in the hotel the night in between hunting ventures? Would that be covered?
It would be. We would require a police report, but the theft incident is going to show that it occurred. And then, of course, the coverages are going to apply.
And would that be homeowners or vehicle owners?
That would be your homeowners.
Homeowners, good. Okay, good information. All right, let's go to the next level. Now we've got a situation where we've inherited a Civil War era musket valued at $30,000. I assume that's going to have require some special handling.
Yes, absolutely. And special is very normal for many different categories. Jewelry is the most common thing that's special category like that. But all I would need is a appraisal. It's going to itemize the gun. It's going to itemize what the value is and why. It'll have the serial number, certainly. And in a $30,000 example, we're going to schedule it for $30,000.
Okay.
Of course, some of these old relics wouldn't have serial numbers, but they would have other identifying marks.
Great. Yeah, you know, that's I've seen a couple simple examples, but I've not seen a relic like that. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, good. Serial numbers are a relatively recent anomaly.
Is
in
that
the,
right?
In the firearms
last 50
world.
To 100
good.
Years.
Yeah. Well, that's why I enjoy your – and this is fun for me today, guys, by the way. I listen frequently and learn a lot, but I didn't realize serial numbers were new.
Well, it's good for all of us, and that's why I think it's important to have this discussion. Now, given the fact, not a relic firearm, a lot of firearms that are common, somebody wants to buy, for example, a Thompson semi-automatic machine gun, but in semi-automatic mode, that would be maybe a $1,500 item. And let's say they had that one. Would that be best scheduled, or would it be best handled as part of their collection of firearms, maybe up to $5,000?
I personally recommend scheduling them, a minor scheduled. While it's very inexpensive to increase the basic type of loss coverage, scheduling a $1,500 gun may cost, in my case, it's about a $20 to a $25 per year cost. And you're opening up the coverage beyond just the named perils of fire and theft, but now you're getting open coverage. So if it, and it's hard to think of examples, you guys probably have more examples than I do, but mysterious disappearance is a primary one if it's being used. I just lost my train of thought, Jeff. I'm so sorry.
That's
everyone.
Fine. Yeah, we've got plenty of things to talk
okay.
about. Let's go to the next level, which is I'm sure what a lot of listeners are concerned about. Personal liability, invent that they're involved in a self-defense situation. Let me give a typical scenario. Somebody in one of those home invasions, they stop the perpetrator en route, and they either shoot and kill or critically injure the person who's broken into their home. Now they're looking at personal liability.
Right.
What kind of, if any, coverage does a typical homeowner's insurance policy cover?
Okay. And the first thing I want to step aside from is any criminal actions. Criminal actions are not going to be covered by homeowner's insurance, and I know that's not the basis of your question. Right. Stepping from there, the insurance industry addresses anything with intent. If there's an intentional action, liability coverages generally are not going to apply. So there's a lot of discrepancy in room, and this whole industry is challenged with is there intent or not intent when you have a firearm ready and loaded. So my industry and insurance is not the best protection that you want as far as protecting yourself, feeling that your liability coverages are included.
Now, does that vary from policy to policy and company to company?
Every company is going to be different. In general, the two words that are going to be similar are criminal and intent.
Mm-hmm.
And and let's say that it does go through the cycle and it's found that intentional is not a problem, so coverage applies. That happens after everything's complete, including the investigation, including the legal cost. So if there is coverage that comes from the insurance policy, generally it's far too late to help the homeowner.
So in the case I gave you, if the police report the investigation was completed and the prosecutor declined to prosecute based on a defense of self-defense or legitimate self-defense situation,
mm-hmm.
and then let's say the perpetrator's family tries to sue the homeowner for wrongful death, I guess that would be the charge.
Right.
Since the individual's been exonerated at the criminal level and there's no criminal prosecution, would the policy then kick in to help them with any potential litigation?
Well, it's a great question. It does take the beginnings of a lawsuit to come after the homeowner to trigger a claim.
Unfortunately.
Absolutely. Yeah, just an incident by itself doesn't bring on anything.
Right.
There are groups and there's memberships to join out there that do have upfront funds available. I'm a member of a great one, and we can use names, right?
Yeah, sure.
I think we'll be hearing soon, but the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network is what I personally belong to.
Well, while we're on the topic, Marty, and we only have a couple minutes before the first break, but Marty, welcome to the show, and why don't you pick up from that point and mention how your organization would help somebody in a situation like that if they were a member?
Okay, well, thank you for inviting me, first of all. And our organization basically is an 8,000-person membership organization. The concept behind it is that if one of us is prosecuted or sued after a legitimate act of self-defense, then the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network will help fund their legal fight. And that's all we're interested in, is winning that legal fight for a lawful armed citizen.
Marty, let me just clarify. When you say legal fight, is that criminal or civil or both?
That's both.
Both. Okay. I just want to clarify for our listeners, because sometimes people differentiate criminal culpability versus civil, and I just wanted to make sure that was clarified. So if a person's a member of the Armed Citizens Network, they would get a hold of their representative or call the office, let them know what happened, and then how long does it take to trigger this process? Is there an immediate initial funding provided up front to help provide for the initial attorney, or how's that work?
Yeah, the first thing that happens is, upon request, typically either from the member, a member's relative, or an attorney, is that we'll provide up to $10,000 retainer to the attorney, just to make sure that the member is represented. That doesn't mean that we've done an investigation, we haven't looked at the facts of the case, but we want to make sure that our member is represented in the legal system by a good, competent attorney.
Good.
After that, then if the member is going to be prosecuted or later sued, then they can request additional funding, and that's not automatic. We have to take a look at the facts of the case and be reasonably assured that it was a legitimate act of self-defense. Many of these cases are very, very fact-specific, and so we can't say yes, we would give them additional money, or no, we wouldn't. But that's basically how the process works.
Okay, guys, we need to take our first break for the hour, and we do have somebody on waiting for us patiently on the phone, and we'll try to get to them as well. But we want anybody who's interested and has a question that would like to call in to call the studio at 457-1290. We'll be back in just a few seconds after this break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro with our guest for Shooting from the Hip on News 95.7 WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and today we're talking about insurance for firearms owners, and right before the break, I promised we'd go out and talk to David. David, welcome to the show, and I want to continue the conversation here and talk about, from a legal perspective, you being an attorney who has some experience in this area of defending people who are involved in firearms-related incidents. First of all, tell us the types of situations you typically encounter and how those situations get underway.
I'd say that the most common, you know, the homicide self-defense is obviously not as regular as some people would think that it occurs, but the most common would be people who have a firearm on them, who feel somewhat threatened, and then either brandish the firearm, pull it out, get into those situations where they haven't actually shot anyone, but they have threatened somebody with a firearm because they themselves feel threatened. Those generally result with the individual getting arrested, and then that's when we get involved, and the question of what actually happens is going to depend a lot on the facts of the case itself.
Do you see that there are some times when people maybe have some misunderstanding as to what constitutes a legitimate threat and reasonable belief that you're at grave bodily harm or death, and how that plays within when they decide to draw the firearm?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, an NRA instructor, in addition to this, so whenever I talk to my class about the concealed handgun licensing issues, you know, I say don't pull it out of your holster unless you're ready to use it. So if the threat is real and it's imminent, and you're actually in belief that you're going to suffer grave bodily harm or death, then that is the time to use it. Because if you think about it practically, if you pull a gun out of the holster and you're in a confrontation with somebody, you've just escalated the seriousness of the harm. And they may, in that case, be justified to use self-defense against you because they don't know what your intentions are. So the fight you avoid is the fight you win. So if you can avoid it, certainly, but it's difficult for a lot of people to understand. There's no set rules as to what is serious bodily harm or death without actual facts to look at.
David, you bring up an interesting point, and you mentioned there that you were an NRA instructor, and I'm guessing that the crux of your course, or the main issue of your course, like ours, is the serious responsibility of owning, carrying, and potentially using a gun, and you provide a solid core foundation on the legal issues. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. I also work with other NRA instructors and provide, you know, a 2-hour legal presentation to their concealed handgun licensing classes. But it's really getting students to understand what is self-defense. not only so that they understand when they're entitled to use self-defense, but also so they understand how people will look at the case once they're in court, you know, because you have a split second to make that decision, but prosecutors, members of the jury, and the judge all have this large amount of time to go back over everything that you did.
Exactly. We have our weekend class going on right now, and our attorneys there doing just what you're talking about. And we tell them teaching people to shoot bullets and handle guns is really the easy part of the course, but getting them to understand the complexities of the law and the critical issues involved in concealed carry is the more difficult proposition.
Guys, we need to take our next break and head out into the news center. And those people who are waiting on the phone, we haven't forgotten about you. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. But if you'd like to be one of those people, call the studio at 457-1290, and we'll try to get you in on this discussion as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro with our guests from the insurance and legal industry today on Shooting from the Hip, News 95.7 WHIO.
Welcome back, listeners, and if you just tuned in, today's show is devoted to insurance and insurance-related issues, and we have in the studio with us today Tony Calley from Allstate, and we have on the line, live from out west, Marty Hayes, who's the president of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, and David Fedders, who's an attorney in the Columbus-based Barney DeBrosse law firm. And I wanted to continue today. I just want to briefly go over what many of you probably have heard about, but you don't know a whole lot about, the insurance that you have as a member or have access to as a member of the NRA. And all of them require action on your part. First of all, just by being a member of the NRA, you're entitled to a $2,500 arms care firearms insurance policy, but you must contact them and activate that. And activating that is just simply a matter of making an inquiry on the computer and providing them with some information, and you automatically have that coverage. But it must be activated. It is not automatic. The second, a follow-up to that, is the Arms Care Plus firearms insurance, which allows you to get considerably more insurance, up to $1 million in coverage for incremental increases in premium. And I just did
I wish
today,
I needed that much insurance
for
my guns.
For the firearms. And yeah. Have, I did an example for Arms Care Plus online. They give you a online calculator for $20,000 of coverage. It would cost you about $218.75 per year. And again, that's an estimate, and there are some other charges, but that's an option for people who want to go above and beyond what they have through their local insurance agent. But just be aware, it's there.
And the $2,500 arms care that you get without.
You get it automatically. Yeah, so if you want to go to the NRA site and look at those insurance policies, they also have additional coverage for the scheduled guns like the relics, like Tony was talking about earlier. So if you have something that's been handed down through the decades or maybe century or couple centuries that you really has a significant value, those must be scheduled, which means they must be itemized and they'll assess a value. They have to be appraised, obviously, and then they'll give you a sum. So that's a separate issue. A couple of other types of insurance, liability when you're hunting or shooting, that's for individuals that might be involved in accidents if they're out hunting or shooting at local ranges. There's insurance policies for firearms instructors, which is a great idea for anybody that's teaching concealed carry or other firearms related topics, because there's always the potential when you have inexperienced people handling firearms that something could happen, and you want to make sure that you are covered. Don't assume that when you're teaching for an entity or with another individual that you are, because that's not the case most of the time.
Yeah, in fact, concealed carry in Ohio is not an NRA certified class, and therefore NRA instructor that covers you automatically if you're teaching an NRA class doesn't apply to a concealed carry.
Then the other two that are of some interest, the one that's most interest, the NRA self-defense insurance, which is somewhat related to what we were talking about with Marty and David earlier. They have a policy that up to $100,000 will cost you $165 annually, all the way up to $600 annually for $1 million coverage. But there are limitations, I understand, on that kind of policy. And I think, Marty, you'd be able to address that particular issue.
Yeah, first of all, I think the NRA policy is about as good as it gets out there. But understand that they don't help you fight the legal fight, at least on the criminal end. If you're prosecuted, then you have to front your attorney's fees. If you're acquitted, then that's when their insurance kicks in to pay you back. On the civil end, it's my understanding they will help you fight that that civil fight up to the $1 million policy if you've got that one.
David, if I could bring you into the discussion just to kind of give our listeners, I know there's probably broad parameters as to how much you're talking about, but what could a person reasonably expect to be amount of expenditure to get things rolling in these kinds of cases?
Well, for a self-defense homicide, our firm has a retainer, not a flat fee, of $50,000. These cases are incredibly complex. You've got to bring in expert witnesses potentially, and at the other end of it, you're facing potentially a murder conviction, and that's a 15-to-life sentence, and that's not something that people take lightly. But at the same time, there is a lot of money that needs to be put up front just to get the ball rolling on a case like that.
How about in the cases you were talking about, the more common cases where someone pulled their firearm and there's some issue as to whether or not, even if it was legitimate, they call you and it's not a homicide, but there's something else? What's a range of they could expect to reasonably have to pay for a retainer?
Our retainer for generally all other matters, so, you know, minor felonies or misdemeanors, things like that, is $2,500, and it's hourly, and so, you know, we may not be able to complete the case for $2,500, but that's what gets us started. That's how we know you're serious, and we can begin moving forward.
Well, and I'm venturing to guess that the minimum wage increase didn't really affect your rates very much because you're in the hundreds of dollars an hour. Is that a correct assumption?
It is. I mean, it's complicated work, but, you know, it provides value to people who need it.
Absolutely. And again, to our listeners out there, one of the main reasons for going down this road is to scratch the surface to get you thinking about all the issues involved. And, you know, in our concealed carry class, we tell them right up front, you know, we're not at all worried about being able to teach you to shoot a firearm, to draw a firearm from a concealed position, to handle your firearm, because that's the easy part of our job. But some of these other issues are things that they hadn't even thought about. Something provoked their interest. It might have been an incident. It might have been a personal situation where they felt in fear for their life or certainly vulnerable. But they walked past all these issues we're talking about now, when in reality, these can be the issues that can be life-changing. And that's why I think it's so important that we have this discussion, to bring to a level of conscious awareness the complexity of the totality of the issues involved in self-defense firearms. And I know, Mark, we've had plenty of discussions about this. And
yeah, I think one of the things that we address and stress in the concealed carry class is that the responsibility of carrying a firearm is far more complex than the shooting part. We can teach anybody to shoot, but if you haven't really thought through these processes, if you don't really understand the moral, ethical, and legal issues associated with carrying a firearm, you probably don't want to be doing that yet. And that's one of the reasons why we focus on that, and one of the reasons why we wanted to have this special show, because these issues are things that people ask about, and we do have an attorney come teach our legal portion, but I think the vast majority of people that go through concealed carry get the Attorney General's guidebook, and they get one instructor's interpretation of what some of those things might be, but they don't have the ability to get a question answered or to hear some of these perspectives from the other side where, like David, where you've had to defend people. And I think Marty probably is in that same situation, both of these guys being attorneys. That's a different perspective. What are some of the things that people do that you just wish they hadn't done or said when they come to you?
I think, you know, the number one, and hitting on this, gun owners are trying to be prepared. But if you don't think through the process, you know, if you don't even know an attorney that you would call in the event, I mean, you know, the police are on their way. Who do you call? If you haven't answered that question at that point in time, then you haven't prepared yourself for what you're getting into. I would think the universal advice for people who are part of a police investigation or any sort of interaction with the law enforcement is don't say anything and definitively ask for an attorney. Say, I want to speak to my attorney or an attorney. That's the number one piece of advice that I can give, because when an attorney is brought in, they're watching out for what the police are doing. They're watching out for what you're saying, and they can act as a filter between the two sides.
Marty, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, actually, I would have to take a different tactic as far as what David just said. I believe that the armed citizen needs to report to the police the crime that was perpetrated against him. Otherwise, the police will think that he committed the crime of murder or assault. The right to self-defense only kicks in when you are the victim of a crime, and the police have to know what the elements of that crime was, or they're going to investigate you as the perpetrator of a crime.
Marty, can you comment on a specific incident that I know you can't talk about incidents that are under litigation, something that your organization has dealt with or the fact pattern where that kind of issue came into play?
Yeah, actually, our organization hasn't dealt with any shootings, but as an expert, I finished up a case last year where an individual in Pennsylvania had to shoot and kill his neighbor. And right off the bat, the instant that the police showed up, he said, listen, this man attacked me. You know, I'm the guy that was assaulted here. I had to shoot to save my life. Well, his story didn't change for the 11 months that he was incarcerated up to the end of the trial. And because he got the facts out that he was the victim, the other guy committed the assault, that went huge in his favor as far as finding an acquittal at the end of the day for him.
David, any follow-up to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to give blanket advice in cases, in any legal case. But I mean, I think when you call 911, you definitely need to say, I was attacked and I defended myself, you know, please send the police. But the issue of describing the situation, if you're out walking your dog and you get attacked, the words that you use, especially in Ohio, you know, there are issues with whether or not you were able to retreat. So how you describe the situation may peg you into a corner when it comes to later in the case. The less you say, the more your attorney has to work with. If you come up with a story real quick, and in the heat of the moment, the adrenaline's flowing, you say something, and maybe it wasn't exactly what you meant to say, but you know it's already out there. That makes it difficult to follow up with it because, again, you know, as Marty was saying, the consistency of the story is important because if you start changing your story, it's hard to say, you know, that you're telling the truth entirely.
It's great that we have this discussion because I can tell you, as a young police officer, I always wondered why people wouldn't talk to us when they thought they were in the right. But as I progressed through my career and I heard about how police officers were treated when they were involved in legitimate shootings and how the courts and certainly the media and other people looked at them, I understood this concept that you got to be selective in what you say and when you say it because it can pigeonhole you and it can get you in a situation where it doesn't look like what you say. And that's so critical in so many of these. So it's really interesting to get the I think very similar perspectives of two people who have background in this, and then I'm going to add just a little bit of insight from my own experience in my world before I retired. But I think it's very important for the listeners to understand that this is a complex process. You got to be careful about what you say. It's best, like David says, and I'm sure Marty and Tony both would recommend, you better be thinking about who you're going to call because it may not be best to call the attorney that handled your mother's will at 2 o'clock in the morning when you've been involved in a situation like this. So you got to think about that. And you got to think about people's background expertise and their ability to understand the issues.
So Marty, how do you go about, how does a licensed person carrying concealed weapon who wants to be prepared go about finding an attorney? Is that something that you can help with?
If they're a member of the Armed Citizens Network, then it's easy because we have probably close to 400 attorneys nationwide to help our members in that event. And so they can set up an appointment, they can meet our attorneys, and they can get that attorney going for them. We're, of course, don't have 100% coverage, but we're working on that. Other than that, they have to start looking at friends, associates, start asking around. Somebody will know a good attorney that will agree to come out to the scene at 2 a.m. and help you talk to the police.
Okay, we need to take our last break for the hour, but we will be back shortly. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on News 95.7 WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and what an informative show it's been. I just want to let our listeners know that as a result of the Connect contacts we've made here, we've mutually agreed that there's going to be follow-up shows because there's so many topics that I'm sure you're interested in hearing that we all want to present and we ourselves are interested in. I want to just take this last segment and let each of them individually talk a little bit. I'll start with you, Tony. Any last-minute ideas or comments that the listeners might be interested in?
Fantastic, and I appreciate you making a comment. Marty and David clearly have the big exposure for carrying firearms. The last thing I'd like to mention, though, when I do a lot of reviews, to remind everybody about their ammunition, their accessories, all the details that go with their guns. My site is more about protecting the property values. Guns can be scheduled, especially when they're high value. I would recommend scheduling your general carry firearm as well, just because the coverages are better. And by all means, it's worth sharing the details you have with your insurance agent just to make sure you know you could buy coverage for that if you so chose to.
Thank you for joining us, Tony.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
David?
Yeah, it's, you know, just to put out in people's minds, when you call your spouse from jail or while you're waiting for the police to arrive, it's not the time to start flipping through the yellow pages to find an attorney. First, most attorneys aren't going to be up at 2 o'clock in the morning to take your call. One of the things that our firm offers as a special product is called the Quick Reaction Program. We get you a business card with our cell phone number on it, and anytime, day or night, if something happens, you can call us and know that you can get a hold of an attorney. If you're interested in getting to know any of our attorneys or in signing up for our Quick Reaction Program, please give us a call. It's 614-326-1919, and we work throughout the state of Ohio, and we'd be happy to help you.
Give us that number again, just for anybody that might not have been writing it down at the time.
Yeah, it's 614-326-1919.
And if people would like to get that information, if they didn't have a chance to copy it down, they can always contact us at radio@sim-trainer.com, and we'll be happy to get that information back to them as well.
Marty, I'll give you a chance to wrap it up.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, first of all, I think that's a great program David's got going, and people really need to take advantage of that. As far as the Armed Citizens Network, we'll help pay for David, and so if you don't have $100,000 laying around, then you consider joining the network. You can go to a link on the Sim Trainer website, or you can just look us up direct at armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Thank you for that. I want to remind our listeners also that one of the sponsors of the radio show, Steve Pearson, who is a local attorney, and he's been with us for several years. He specializes in this. His number is 937-299-2995. That's 937-299-2995. And Steve's a personal friend, and he's kind of trudged through things, as I'm sure, David, you and your staff have done over the last several years. And they've weathered the storm of attacks and issues that have been raised. But this is something everybody needs to be thinking about. And again, the main purpose of this show and follow-up shows related is to bring to your awareness, your conscious awareness, some of the other ancillary issues that you overlook. And I just hate for the fact, and even as a police officer, I was astounded sometimes that the first time somebody thought about legal representation was when they were in trouble. Especially in my line of world, most of the kids that cause trouble or people that cause trouble, they've been in trouble a lot of times, so they should have been thinking about that. You people don't mean to do any trouble. Things just come finding, or trouble finds its way of rearing its ugly face with honest, law-abiding citizens. So please, do yourself the favor of thinking this through ahead of time so you don't have to do it after the fact. It's just
At that point, it's just too late. And that's part of being a prepared citizen, being, you went through the process to get your license to carry a concealed handgun because you wanted to be prepared for things that you hope never happen. This is another one of those aspects. Take the guidance that you've been hearing today seriously. Come back and listen to this show again on our website at sim-trainer.com/radio. We'll have this archived, and people will be able to come back and listen to it. And I'm sure that this will be something that we'll like to do again in a series. And so, guys, thanks very much for being part of it. We are out of time, unfortunately. I apologize to the caller that we didn't get to, but hopefully he'll call back next week because he had a good question, and it's something I think that people would like to find out the answer to. Thanks very much for being part of the show today. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on News 95.7 WHIO.